Strictly Sail and Kayak, located in the Cincinnati, Ohio area, has a lot to offer when it comes to the sailing and kayaking realm. From Hobie catamarans and Catalina yachts to a wide range of kayaks like Hobie, New Canoe, Feel Free, Three Waters, and Old Towns. They also carry products from companies like Yak Attack, Bending Branches, Torquedo, Amped Outdoor Batteries, and the list goes on. So if you're in the market for a new sailboat or kayak, reach out to my friends there for great prices and awesome customer service. Chances are, if you need it, they have it. Or they can order it and have it to you quick, fast, and in a hurry. So these guys have been doing this a long time. So they know their stuff. So give them a call at 513-984-1907 or visit their website at strictlysailinc.com.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Freaky giant.
I don't want to get bit.
Oh, yeah!
Yes!
And I got that on film.
Okay, keep rolling. Keep reeling.
Oh, man. Guys, it has been an extremely busy 2 weeks. Extremely busy 2 weeks. Oh, well, I guess we're ready, right? Maybe. Hopefully.
Let's boogie.
Welcome to the Evolving Angler Podcast. Me and Jeremy and Steve hanging out, talking fishing. Glad you could join in. And it's been a while, man. And I want to initially apologize about last week, about no episodes being put out. Listen, you know, you guys got to remember, you know, we got lives and family and things. And man, it was just a very, very, very crazy 2 weeks. I was caught up, able to put some stuff out last week. But man, I had to take a week and just unwind while I was still working. You know, I'm job switching, even though I was working all last week and stuff. Man, it's good, you know. Sometimes we just all got to take a little break, chill. I don't know, Jeremy, you were on vacation, weren't you?
Yeah. Me and my wife went down to Florida.
Nice.
We originally went down, just go to Disney, but she ended up getting a fishing charter set up. So we actually did that 2 days instead of just the 1 day that she'd planned. So
that is awesome. I'm excited to hear about all that, because, dude, you caught a monster fish, whatever the frig that is. So I'm not big on saltwater. I mean, I'm not big on my knowledge of saltwater fish, but I can tell you what a shark is and stingray. And that's about as far as it goes. But Steve, how you doing, man? How you doing?
I'm doing pretty good. How's it been?
Been good, man. I know you've been on some little trips there, too. I'm excited to talk about tonight. I feel like I've slacked. I ain't really been anywhere besides my house, still doing home repairs, but it's coming along. I got turkey and chickens now, and my neighbors tell me they're going to go ahead and just call this. Actually, my neighbor across the road told me he was going to make me a sign or something. It says Nick's Farm or something over here. I got two big gardens, chickens, turkeys, and I guess I'm going to get goats before next spring because I hate weed eating my hillside. So. But, yeah, lots and lots of stuff going on here at the old Nick Farm. I don't know, man. I don't know where to start. I want to give a shout-out to our upcoming Bluegrass Kayak Anglers event, May 20th on Kentucky Lake, and that is in conjunction with the Hobie Bass Open Series. And there's some info on that. I know Kyler, Tournament Director Kyler, he put out a video on the Bluegrass Kayak Anglers Facebook page that you guys can go check out. Covered a lot of great info. About the event, anything else, any questions, concerns, comments, yada, yada, be sure to message Bluegrass Kayak Anglers on Facebook. You can shoot me a message, Kyle Branham, et cetera, and we'll get you some info out on that event for the Bluegrass Kayak Anglers. Like I said, it's in conjunction with Hobie BOS. We're looking for a great turnout. It's going to be a great event. And it's going to be a good time. A little bit far for me to travel with everything I got going on, or I was going to try to fish it, but I don't think I will be able to. But if you're in the area or you're looking to fish a good event, check out Bluegrass Kayak Anglers Kentucky Lake Event May 20th. Jeremy, you got plans to fish yet?
No, I've got some other stuff going on that weekend, so I'm not going to be able to make that one.
Gotcha. I know it's a drive from Georgetown, let alone from where I'm at, so.
Mm-hmm.
It's a little travel. But they say Kentucky Lake's on the up and up. You know, I guess there's more bait fish, less Asian carp. There we go. Brain's fried. But they say it's on the up and up. It's getting better and better. Steve, Jeremy, there's some things I want to talk about, man, because both of y'all been on some trips, and excited to hear about it. Seen some video, and want to dive into this thing. So I don't know who to start with. Steve, let's talk about you, man. You were, I know you've been down to Cumberland catching sturgeon here recently. How's that been, man? How's the bite down there?
You know, when I talk to people from out of state, they say, what's it like being down in Kentucky? How's the fishing down in Kentucky? And I say, it's literally fishing in rainbows. And everybody kind of, you know, kind of laughs and don't understand that when I say literally, I mean it. So it wasn't very long ago. Me and Laura, my girlfriend, we headed down to Cumberland Falls. Now, if you've never been, you need to go. It's a beautiful place. It's nicknamed the Southern Niagara. It's right on the Cumberland River. It's Kentucky's largest waterfall. And we fished directly underneath the falls, man. So we had to like climb over some huge boulders and stuff. But it's the furthest upstream that sturgeon and striped bass are able to travel because the falls prevents them from reaching the upper reaches of the river. But if you go on a sunny day and you make it down there, you're literally casting your line into a freaking rainbow, man. It's spectacular. Mm-hmm. And there's this big pool that's created right underneath the falls and tons of fish live in there. You know, you got crappie, walleye, sauger, striped bass, white bass, get all your different kinds of black bass. But that day we were targeting lake sturgeon. So I've been shooting these videos and posting them online. I got this little series going on called Fishing for Fossils. And the first fish that we decided to go after, you know, was the sturgeon. And I know I've talked with you before about sturgeon, but listen, as a man that just loves science and the science of fish, I find these things so amazing. Sturgeons show up in the fossil record at the same time as the dinosaurs. So to think that there's something that survived all these mass extinction events that have happened since the time of the dinosaurs and they're swimming around in our lakes, creeks, and rivers here in Kentucky. It just blows my mind, man. So we get up there and we're, you know, we're shooting the video and like, it's hard not to just be taken away by the awe and the beauty of this place. I know you listeners can't see, but I actually have a picture that I took as my background right now on, online. So, you know, you're just taken by the overall beauty of it. You're casting underneath of a rainbow and, you know, you're hoping for a bite. The current up there, it's wicked, but it's perfect conditions for these sturgeon. All kinds of food items are just washing over these falls, small fish, invertebrates, snails, worms, basically whatever. Sturgeon kind of just go around sucking up all the organic matter on the bottom of the riverbed, you know?
Yeah.
And, We actually did pretty good. We caught a couple that day. And if you've never seen one up close, you've got to look them up. And hopefully you can get out and fish for them. They're just so muscular. And pound for pound, they're probably, in my opinion, one of the hardest fighting fish in freshwater in North America.
They remind me a lot of myself, you know, being so muscular, you know. Sorry. Yes,
yeah, that was.
I see that picture behind you, man. You know, I've seen some crazy kayak guys do all this crazy water. I've seen those videos of those guys going over those falls, man. That's incredible.
That is wild. Listen, I have a lot of hobbies that people call crazy. You know, I'm out playing with snakes and swimming with alligators and all this stuff.
Yeah,
but I don't believe that there's a lump sum of money that you could pay me to go over them falls. They're really tall. You don't realize how high they are until you're, you know, down at the base of them. Yeah. And all of those boulders, man, it's pretty wild. Now,
the guys that did go over it got fined.
Right.
They actually had to pay to do that.
Nice. What are you drinking?
Big Wave Golden Ale.
Thought that it was going to be Bud Light.
Oh, no.
No, no. Sorry. I'll refrain.
No.
Just making a joke. Nope. Send me hate mail. It was a joke.
I'm a Budweiser guy anyway.
You know, I ordered Budweiser at a bar once. I was in high school. I shouldn't say that. Well, who cares? In high school, I went to a bar. Yeah, nobody really cared where I was from. And I really liked Budweiser better than Bud Light. And I think I was the only guy in the entire bar that ordered Budweiser. And I walked up there and I said, hey, give me a Budweiser. And he's like, you don't mean Bud Light? And I was like, no, Budweiser. And he literally stopped the music and goes, hey, this guy's ordering a Budweiser. And everybody laughed at me. And I was like, you know what? Screw this place. I'm going to come back. And so I took my Budweiser and left. But I don't drink anymore. I couldn't, even if I wanted to, have celiac. But I was curious what you're drinking there. Steve. So you said you caught a couple sturgeon there. How big were they?
They were in the, I want to say, the 30-inch range. They weren't massive or anything. You know, last time you and I, Nick, went sturgeon fishing, you know, we were catching some big old 4+ footers.
Yeah.
They weren't that large, but I it's been such a long time since I've been out after them. I kind of forgot what the fight was like on these guys. So,
yeah,
you know, I was still absolutely thrilled. Anytime you go for something oddball species and you actually catch it, you're just ecstatic regardless of the size. You're like, wow, I did it. Even if you've done it 20 times before, every time I go and, you know, I'm successful, I'm like, awesome, I did it.
Yeah. Jeremy, didn't you make it? Am I wrong on this? I'm thinking you made a trip down there recently, not to the falls, but to just Cumberland River.
No, we were trying that during the tournament, but all that rain shut us down.
That's right. Yeah. Never mind. Drugs are bad. Yeah. But dude, I'm dying. Like, I love being back home with family, but I miss the fisheries in central Kentucky. And now, instead of like 2 hours from Cumberland, I am like 4. So it's heartbreaking. But moving on, Jeremy, let's talk about your trip, man. You recently went on, was it anniversary vacation or
just kind of? Yeah, it was anniversary vacation.
Nice. And your wife hooked you up with a charter trip, huh?
Yeah, I told her I wanted to go bass fishing. We ended up saltwater fishing. But
that's awesome.
After the trip, I'm not going to complain.
Yeah, but, so how'd all that play out, man?
Well, we went out on Saturday, the first day we got down there, and the guy told us that it's been very bad fishing down there here lately. It's a lot of wind, a lot of current change that just pretty much shuts down the fishing for saltwater. So he, you know, kind of put us, I don't know how to say that. It didn't really give us high expectations, to say the least. And we caught a few sail cats, caught a stingray, caught a little speckled trout.
Did you say a sail cat?
Yeah. It's a saltwater catfish.
Really?
And evidently you can't touch them. Something about their barbs. Like here, you get stuck by a channel cat, it hurts for a day. But down there, it's like, I don't know if it's deadly or just hurts really bad.
See, that's what I say about saltwater fishing. I'm scared to death of anything that I don't know what it is, because it's like, you'll go to grab a fish that's about the size of your hand and be like, oh, just go to lip it. Next thing you know, you're poisoned and you die a terrible death.
Well, you know those little, they call them tangs. They're yellow tangs. They kind of look like, it's like the dory fish, but it's all yellow and has that like pointy pig nose.
It was all yellow. Oh, sorry. Go ahead. No, but I have no idea.
It's like just a normal little fish. I'll have to find a picture of it. Huh. But they're venomous or poisonous. One, they have two barbs on their tail that will actually poison you. We learned that at the aquarium when we were at Disney.
See, oceans are just a death pond is all they are.
Oh, yeah.
You know, I don't even like swimming in the ocean. Yeah. Well, that's incredible. That thing looks nice. Yeah. It looks friendly.
Yeah, that's what I said. But there's two little barbs on its tail that are poisonous, venomous.
See,
so,
you know, it's wild for us freshwater guys, because like everything that you catch, we judge a fish by, does it taste good or is it a trash fish, you know?
Yeah.
But when you're out in the ocean, man, like literally every species of freshwater fish in the world you can eat, it's fine to eat it. I mean, you may not like it, you know, you may flay that trout or that big old carp out and be like, yeah, this isn't for me, but it's relatively safe to eat. Yeah. There's so many poisonous species of fish out in salt water. And like what Nick was talking about, you know, you don't want to lip the wrong fish. Man, we were in Mississippi fishing one time, and something kept stealing my bait. So I downsized the hook. I was using big pieces of cut bait, and I caught this little fish, and it was like 6 inches long, and it was a croaker, man. And I reached it, my thumb in to kind of about to lip it like a normal fish, and I seen those teeth, dude. They were monstrous teeth in this itty bitty little fish. And I was like, what the heck is going on down here in Mississippi? You know, but that's just saltwater fishing. I really enjoy it. I don't get to do it as much as I'd like to. That is awesome that your wife booked that for you. No wonder you married her.
Yeah. Yeah, man. That's what I said in the end of my video. I'm like, man, you all need to find you a woman that'll, you know, take you fishing for your anniversary.
Yeah, for sure. All right. So, sorry. Didn't mean to interrupt. Go ahead.
Oh, you're good. But yeah, I mean, just caught a couple small fish the first day. And at the end of the trip, he told us, he's like, look, guys, sorry the fishing sucked. I, you know, didn't really have high expectations, but the next trip's on me. So we're like, all right, we appreciate that and everything. And the next day we went to Disney at Epcot. They have that little aquarium there. And we were going after several jacks or serval jacks, whatever they call them. And I showed her some of the aquarium. She's like, you know what? F it. Let's go fishing for our anniversary. We don't have plans. I'm like, come on. Don't mess with me. She said, no, I'm serious. She said, let's call him back up.
She's like, play.
You know, yeah. She's like, if he doesn't have anyone booked that day, she said, let's go ahead and do it. I mean, we're already down here. And I'm like, all right, cool. So we called him up, and rain was supposed to come in that day. So we figured we only had 3 or 4 hours. Went back out. She ended up catching another sail cat, the biggest she caught. I think it was probably almost 18 inches, I want to say. I mean, it's a good size sail cat. And we went back to under this bridge, and he marked some on his fish finder. And when I tell you this guy can read side scan and read that fish finder, I mean, he is a friggin' pro. I mean, he was able to pick stuff out that I'm just like, yeah, I see it, and I'm really not seeing it. But then once he zooms in, I see exactly what he's talking about.
Yeah.
He marked some black drum through half of a blue crab down there, and within 15 seconds, peck, 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 and just ran with it. And I set the hook, and I had to get him away from this piling, otherwise he would have wrapped up in it, because we broke one off a couple of days before that. And I mean, drag was screaming. Took me a couple minutes to get it up. It hit the surface of water, and both me and him just hooping and hollering. I think he was more excited for me than I was.
Yeah, I seen y'all hollering in that video. Man, it was awesome. That was a big fish, too, man.
Yeah. Yeah, we estimated to weigh probably close to 50, if not over 50.
Gosh.
So, I mean, just the thickness of this fish. Like, the pictures did not do the fish justice.
Man.
So...
what kind of setup? Was it one of his setups or something?
Yeah, it's just a little spinning setup. I mean, I had that rod doubled over. I'm like, I'm either going to break off or I'm getting him in one, two.
Yeah.
But yeah, that was definitely one fish that I've, you know, it's a fish that was on my bucket list. It was a black drum.
Did you eat it?
No, we turned him loose. Got a few pictures. Didn't get any measurements or anything. But we got him back in the water, and he's like, you know, just shoot him straight down. And I'm like, I'm not doing that to this fish. And I just kind of laid it in the water and just kind of like picked it up and dropped it. And I mean, shot off like a little 12-inch bass when you put it in the water.
Yeah.
You know, they say black drum is one of the best fish for ceviche. You guys ever had ceviche?
Mm-mm.
I can't even spell ceviche.
What it is, you chop up the fish with peppers and salt. And instead of cooking it, you can just kind of squirt in some kind of citrus, usually lemon or lime juice, and that'll cook the fish for you.
I've heard about that. And you eat it that way? Nope.
Oh, it's delicious. I see you shaking your head over there, Nick.
Nope.
Don't knock it till you try it. You'd be really surprised, I believe.
So raw fish, basically.
It's not raw.
The acids in the citrus cook it.
Mm-mm. Right.
Not enough for me. It probably is really good though. I'll take your word on it though. It's like Baloo. Is that what it was that you ate?
Yeah, in the Philippines. Yeah.
And that was a half. Now, explain that again. For those of you who haven't listened to this episode yet, it was the first episode I had Steve on. I think it was called, was it Catching Dinosaurs?
I think it was.
Was it?
Yeah.
Yeah, it was Catching Dinosaurs. For those of you listening, you haven't listened to this episode, it's called Catching Dinosaurs. I think it's like the 12th episode ever. And Steve talks about eating this substance that, why you would even try this. Now, explain what it is again.
All right. Well, first, let's keep in mind that, you know, growing up, I had a few different heroes that I'd watch all the time on TV. Steve Irwin, the crocodile hunter, of course.
Greg, okay. Yep.
And then Anthony Bourdain. And sadly, you know, neither one of them turned out all right at the end. Which is really unfortunate. But anyways, Anthony Bourdain, if you don't know who he is, everybody knows who Steve Irwin is. But he was a traveling chef that traveled around the world, and he tried all these different local cuisines. So, you know, I used to always watch his show, and I'd be like, man, I'm going to do some of that stuff when I'm older. I go to the Philippines, and me and my friend are actually there looking for cobras. But we flew into Manila, which is the largest city, the capital city of the Philippines. And, you know, we were trying the different street foods and everything. And the national dish over there is Baloo. I mean, these little stands are set up everywhere. Like you'd see hot dog stands in New York or something, you know? And what it is it's partially incubated duck eggs. So I'm guessing that this was a food, you know, that people learned to eat back in the old days. Like times were tough. We're going to crack into the duck eggs because that's all we got. But basically they incubate the duck eggs in hot rice for like 15 to 18 days. And the embryo inside starts to form, and then it's steamed and eaten kind of like a deviled egg. Most of them put a little shot of vinegar on top of it after you peel it back. And that's probably the most adventurous food I've ever eaten in my life. I won't say that I'll do it again because I took a bite into it, and, you know, it really wasn't that bad. But my friend was making fun of me. He's like, what kind of bite is that? Take a big bite. And I take a big bite and kind of squirts in the back of my throat. And I pretty much just throw up in front of everybody. And, you know, all the locals are just kind of pointing and laughing at me and everything. So little embarrassing. Like I said, I probably won't try it again if I ever go back. But I'm glad that I tried it. Just because it's something synonymous with that country. You know what I mean? It'd be kind of like going to Hawaii and not swimming in the ocean. You can't go to the Philippines if you don't try the local food.
Going to Japan and eating teriyaki chicken.
Right.
Oh, that's what I do. Jeremy, what's the worst food you've ever eaten? Toyota chicken sandwich?
No, because they don't ever cook those.
I know. I don't know how many times the last little bit I worked there, I don't know how many times people would post pictures of raw chicken between two pieces of bread.
Yeah. You'll eat that chicken, but you won't eat the ceviche?
I wouldn't eat any of it. Oh.
Yeah, I don't eat fish anyway, so I'm never going to try it.
Steve, tell us a little bit about the steelhead fishing. Wait, so you did kind of like a little, I guess, kind of like a two-part trip, didn't you? The Ohio Fish Rescue and steelhead?
Was that right? Here,
or maybe it was a three-part trip, both in and all that too?
Well, that was when I got back to Kentucky. But we got some family that lives up in Northeast Ohio, and we headed up there. Anywhere I go, I got a fish, man. So I got, you know, fishing licenses, and this is April, and I've already got fishing licenses in five different states. Anywhere we travel to, I got to try it, you know?
Yeah.
So we're going up Northeast Ohio, and it's the beginning of April, and it's the tail end of the Steelhead Run. Now, it's like a 400-mile drive up to where my family lives up there. And no sooner we get there, bad weather sets in. And I have some friends up there that were dying to go out with me, go steelhead fishing. We were going to catch up. But we had some awful storms roll in. And everybody's like, oh, the rivers are going to be blown out. The rivers are going to be blown out. You're just wasting your time if you go up there. But I mean, like, if you know me, you know how stubborn I can be, especially when it comes to fishing. So, you know, I'm like, I'll find an eddy or something. Like, I'm not up here enough not to go if I'm here.
Yeah.
So we go out and we pick up a few different baits, pick up salmon eggs and pick up different little jigs, take minnows, you know, pick up some random little trout baits, thinking that these steelhead are, you know, maybe they're like Kentucky trout, the stock trout or whatever. If you don't know what a steelhead is, it's actually just a rainbow trout that spends the majority of its time in Lake Erie or Great Lakes or the ocean, depending on where you're at. And then at certain times of the year, they swim upstream in into freshwater and into, you know, the different tributaries.
Okay.
So we go out and all this weather had been in, been raining for days, and sure enough, the river's blown out. And walking up and down the river and, you know, I'm trying to get a bait, do a good presentation, but it's just flowing so fast and it's muddy and everything. Just happened to walk by this little tiny creek. And when I say little tiny, I mean like little tiny, maybe 6 feet across. And hear something splash behind me, you know. So here I am fishing in the river and just hear this splash behind me and turn around and look. And I realized there's steelhead in this tiny little creek. So we go up and I see this one deep hole and I'm trying over and over different baits, different presentations and everything. And this creek was so small, it reminds you of what you'd fish for brook trout in like the Appalachian Mountains. Not a place that you'd imagine 30-inch trout being. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And finally, I switch over this little jig and I'm just dropping it and letting it wash downstream, this little orange jig, and then slowly retrieving it and boom, there goes the drag, man. My pole doubles over and it takes off and it's the first steelhead of the trip. And like, I realize like, we got to go further up the stream and I get it in. And if you've ever caught a big fish in tiny water, it's something else because, you know, you're up there and you got real light action line and here the fish are swimming between these little holes. Most of the water is, you know, 4 or 6 inches deep. And then every so often there's like a deep hole that might be 1 to 2 feet deep. And when the fish hits, it's just running between the holes. It's going over all these rocks and all these ledges and,
nice,
you know, around tree roots and everything else. So you're kind of like running with the fish. It was so exciting, you know?
Yeah.
After that first one, man, we ended up going further up the creek and found a few more holes. My girlfriend caught the biggest one of the trip because that's usually how it goes. You know, I'm stoked for it and she ends up showing me up.
Yeah.
But man, it was so exciting. And, you know, there was areas where the creek was literally 2 feet wide and a foot deep. And you could see these big 26, 28, 30 inch fish in it. You know, it was just absolutely amazing.
Yeah.
We ended up doing really well and catching a good amount of fish. We kept a few. We turned a few loose and took them home and, you know, made lemon pepper trout. And or lemon pepper steelhead rather, and delicious and just so exciting.
Yeah.
But while we was up there, I also got invited to the Ohio Fish Rescue.
See, now, I don't know. I'm interested in learning about this.
I don't know if you've ever looked it up, but what it is it's a nonprofit organization. And so, you know, I know you've done it a million times. You've walked into Walmart and you've seen the fish tanks, or you've walked to Petco and you've seen like these tiny little exotic fish. You're looking at like a 3-inch pacu fish and you're thinking, man, I could probably set up a 10-gallon tank and keep that sucker.
Yeah.
Well, the thing is, a lot of these exotic fish get freaking huge. And what this rescue does is it takes surrendered fish. So when people realize that they can't keep a pacu in a 10-gallon aquarium, you know, the $40 Walmart special isn't going to house this fish from the tropics that gets 20-plus pounds, they'll give it to the Ohio Fish Rescue, who will either A, give it a forever home and much better suited environment, or B, foster it temporarily until they can find somebody that is willing to adopt the fish and give it a bigger enclosure. I think their motto is finding fish a bigger home. When I first looked them up, I really wasn't expecting that much. You know, I was like, I hate to say it, but I was expecting to kind of walk into like a pet store scenario. You know, you got tanks lined in the walls and that kind of be it. But no, man, as soon as you walk in these giant aquariums, like you'd see at, you know, a zoo or something, from the Bellagio, just filled with all these cichlids from Africa. And that's like immediately as soon as you walk in and you're walking around and you're seeing all these amazing fish species. Like, it was like going to an aquarium, but being right up close and personal with them.
Yeah.
So I got to see albino sturgeon, albino and calico gar. As they were touring us around, he was showing us koi. And, you know, after just seeing the albino sturgeon, I was like, it's koi. It's big goldfish. And he's like, well, these koi actually come from shack. I was like, Shaq, like Shaquille O'Neal? He's like, yeah, Shaq. Shaq had some koi in a pond, and he asked us to take care of them, and they multiplied. Now we got tons of Shaq's koi all over the place. So that was pretty neat, you know?
Yeah.
And we're going through, and we're checking out all the different animals. They got freshwater stingrays. They got pacus, monstrous pacus. Like, if you were to catch in an aquarium, if you were to catch that fish in Kentucky, you'd be like, wow, this is a record. I got to put it on the wall. They got dozens of them. And let's see, they had an electric eel. And what was really cool is they had a little LED light system hooked up with the electrodes in the water. So as the eel swam by, it would light up this little sign. Because a lot of people don't realize this, but electric eels, they're not just emitting the electric when they're in danger, but they also kind of emit pulses of electricity to kind of sense their surroundings. So every so often, the fish would just be pulsating to check its surroundings, and the light would flicker. It was really, really neat. But the creme de la creme was when they showed me the predator pond. He says, are you ready for this? And I'm like, well, yeah. You know, I got my girlfriend with me. I got kids with me. They're just having an absolute ball. You know, they're walking around, sticking her face right up against the glass, being like, it's looking back at me. Yeah. You know, and we walk out and we see the predator pond, and it is an in-ground swimming pool that they had converted into this big ecosystem. Swimming in these waters was like the entire first season of Jeremy Way's River Monsters. So there was arapaima in there longer than me. And like, I'm 6 foot, and these fish were bigger than me. There was red-tailed catfish. There was goonch catfish. There was alligator gar. Not just normal alligator gar. They had melanistic, which are the solid black ones. They had regular alligator gar. They had long-nosed gar that were calico-colored, like splotches of brown, black, white, all over their bodies. It was just absolutely amazing to see all these fish in this pond, you know? So yeah. Part of me is really obsessed with it because I'm like, oh, you got to appreciate the passion of these guys. Big Rich is his name. He put in so much energy into creating this perfect habitat for these exotic fish species to give them a good home. But at the same time, the angler in me is like, what I wouldn't give to drop a fishing line in here right now.
That's how I feel every time I go in Bass Pro.
Oh, yeah. I mean, like, you're like, oh, gosh, what a beautiful fish. And then you're like, man, I want to drop a bait in front of it so bad. I can't stand it.
Dude, isn't it wild, kind of on subject and off subject? Have you seen the videos of the guys that, like, just jump in the tank or something? Bass Pro.
Yeah.
Then they just run out. I'm like, man, I'd be throwing a bait in there. trying to catch a big 10-pound bass real quick.
Listen, all I'm saying is Sportsman's Warehouse does not have a tie-in with Cabela's and Bass Pro anymore, so it may be worth a lifetime ban.
Yeah, I mean, you can still find some baits at Sportsman's. Oh, that's funny. Oh, man. I know, Steve, I'm off this week. Are you off any this week?
I got a couple days coming up. I'll have to check and see my work schedule. But we got to get out and do some fishing, man.
Well, I want to catch a bowfin, and I want to lead into that and kind of segue into that topic. But if you were off this week, Jeremy, y'all know you work, don't you?
Mm-hmm.
I imagine you did, where you just come back from vacation.
Man, I burned a lot of days.
I would love to go catch some bowfin this week. All right, from that, Steve, let's move into bowfin. You took a bowfin trip up Ohio too, right?
Well, when I got back to Kentucky, you know, we started getting back on work on fishing for fossils, little video series that we're doing. And what's next on the list after the sturgeon? The bowfin. It's finally warming up. You know, we're starting to get days that are 80 degrees. And bowfin, another dinosaur age fish species, is still swimming around, also known as grinnell, mudfish, shoepick, depending on where you're at, little predators that live in the swampy areas where a lot of other predators can't survive.
Yeah.
So even the most stagnant pools might have a bowfin sitting in it, gobbling up the frogs and whatnot.
Yeah.
So we went out and, you know, it's a little slack water that's off the Ohio River that I found on Google Maps. And I tracked down a lot of my sites on Google Maps. I love that app. I'll turn on satellite view and just zoom right in and find a spot. And so we've had success there before. And we get out, we're fishing, you know, and we catch bluegill and we cut it up, make cut bait. If you've listened to the previous Tackle Talk episode, you know, it's basically my favorite way to fish for them.
Yeah.
So cast out, and then bobber goes under. I'm thinking, man, that was fast. Set the hook, start reeling in. Like, where's the fight at? Like, this is a decent fight. Like, there's some fight on there, but this ain't no bowfin. Get it up to the bank. It's a yellow bullhead. So, pop it off, throw it back out in the water. Cast the line right back out there. Under the water. Set the hook, reel it in. It's a yellow bullhead.
That's good catfish bait.
Well, these were actually pretty good size yellow bullheads. I mean, they're 12, 14 inches.
Jeez.
My girlfriend, her bobber goes under. Sets the hook. She reels it in. Yellow bullhead. I'm thinking to myself, man, I don't know what's happened. Last year, we were absolutely slaying the bowfin out here. And now it looks like it's just taken over by yellow bullheads. Move over on the other side of this log structure that's out there. Bait's not out there, you know, 5 minutes and then goes underwater. But the line takes off. The bobber goes underwater, but the line takes off really fast this time. Set the hook. Pole doubles over. There's the fight. That's what I'm looking for. Reel in the first bowfin, and then it's on. So apparently those first few casts, I don't know. I was just in a spot full of yellow bullheads. For some reason, they were congregating in there. I'm not joking when I say 10 foot to the right of that. It was bowfin after bowfin after bowfin.
That's crazy.
I love bowfin. They're one of my favorite fish to catch, and I would really love to put you on some. Just so you know what I'm talking about when I'm rambling on about these things. But that was a really good day. We did really well with them. Can't wait to get back out.
Yeah, for sure, dude. That's a bucket list fish for me. I haven't caught one yet. Have you caught any, Jeremy?
I have not. That's a bucket list for me as well.
Man, got to get out there and do it.
Mm-hmm.
So what's y'all's next plans? When's your next trip? When's your next fishing trip? What's you, Jeremy?
Probably the Kayaks and More Trail on Barron River.
Nice. When is that? So
that is May 13th or May 8th.
Okay.
Not 100% sure, but yeah, I'm excited for that one because, bass should be moving up bedding. I actually went out last week before we went on vacation to Beaver Lake. And there were already some on bed, so hooked into a nice one.
I think Dave Mills won this past event, didn't he?
I think so.
I think it was Dave Mills, Adam Shepard, and Dave Haberstein. Haberstein. Yeah. First, second, third. Yeah. Congrats to Dave Mills. Heck yeah. Adam Shepard, Dave Haberstein. Haberstein's been on the podcast before.
Mm-hmm.
So that's pretty cool. Pretty cool. I like Tony and them. That's great group.
Some good people down there.
Great shop, great food, great poop. Great shop, great poop. Great group of people. Pretty cool trail too. So, yeah. Guys, it's been great chatting with y'all and catching up. Those of you listening, hope you guys continue to listen to these episodes. It's we appreciate the support. We appreciate the downloads. Appreciate the feedback. We're going to be doing a little giveaway. I'll have info on that this coming Monday, on this coming Monday's episode. We'll do a little cool package for you guys, a little giveaway package, and you'll find out the details on how you can win this stuff in next Monday's episode. So be sure to tune in.
I do want to throw out there, make sure to not fall for the fake evolving Aggler that's going to eventually pop up when we post this too.
Oh gosh, man. Every time some guy from India, I'm not stereotyping, it's literally somebody from the country of India, according to their Facebook. So the way it works is they'll make a fake Facebook that's really close to ours and try to do the same giveaway. And then, like, after a
few
weeks,
kill the pictures off the post.
Yeah.
And make it look just like the post that we would post.
And then after, like, 2 weeks of nobody biting it, then they'll change their profile pic back to somebody, and it's always India. So I don't know, man. So I'm not stereotyping. It's literally somebody in India that hates my podcast, but, but yeah, so be sure to check that out and, do not, do a giveaway or participate in a giveaway from the Evolving Aggler. That is a fake account. reminds me, I don't think I told you guys about this. I found a page on TikTok that said the Evolving Angler that was not me, and it was a profile picture of the logo. And I reported it the best I knew how, and it's no longer there. But you know, you can't really report stuff like you can like on Instagram, Facebook, but yeah. So that was weird.
Maybe it's one of your old accounts that they kicked you off of because, you know, you like to put hooks in your face and stuff like that. And you don't twerk.
I'm not an underage kid that twerks. So, yeah, that's
right. I have TikTok now.
You have TikTok now?
Yeah. Like I actually just had it a couple hours ago.
Okay. So what's your thing on there, man?
I don't know. My wife made it.
Oh.
So me and her have the same thing. Hold up.
It's Pookie Boo at.
Dude, I don't know how to do this crap. Like, I have Instagram, all that. I do Facebook, and that's it. Hold on. Tell me what to do, Nick. I don't know.
I have no idea. I have a TikTok.
Oh, profile. All right. It's Shauna and Jeremy Honecker.
It's a dual account.
Listen.
Dual account.
And my wife made it. Oh, no. It's Honecker Adventures.
As my buddy says. Anytime you see a dual account, somebody cheated. Yeah.
No.
Yeah.
No. I cheated on her with that big black drum I caught.
Oh. Oh, you said drum. Jesus. Lord Jesus. Yeah. You did kind of cuddle that drum kind of hard. I seen that.
Dude, did I show you the shirt?
No.
I didn't show you my shirt. I'll have to send that to you all in the group real quick.
What it
say? Yeah, like it ruined my hook sweater. Hold on.
Let's see.
I want to hear your all's reactions on this whenever I send it to you.
All right.
And then once you end this, I'm going to tell you what I told my wife.
You got to say it on the podcast.
No, I can't say it on the podcast.
Oh, you chicken.
Oh, where's it at? I bet she deleted it.
So she has full control of your phone too. Gah.
I guess.
Gah.
Too many of them Bud Lights down in Florida.
I thought you were a man. Give me your man card.
Oh, there it is. Hold on. Hold on. I got it. Hold on. Let me share it to you all. This is going to be the worst ending on a podcast so far.
No, I love it. I love it.
Oh, man. What? That is rough.
Is that from the drum?
Yeah, that's from where I was holding it against my body.
Wow.
Well, yeah. You really working
like, it, like we, it. We have washed it, and that's the slime still has not come out of that.
That looks like you've been doing drywall.
Yeah, that's what we'll say.
Wow. That's impressive.
We'll use that as the PG.
So why is just something on the drum?
They're slimy.
Yeah, well, I've never had a musky do that. They're slimy.
No, dude. When I tell you they're slimy, I mean, it's like I was rinsing my hands off in salt water and it was not coming off.
Interesting.
Yeah, I would love to have brought one back and use it as cut bait around here.
Yeah, I'd say it had stink on it for 6 months.
Yeah, I might just cut up that hook sweater and just throw it out on a hook.
Guarantee it. Get that hoodie up, throw it out there.
Get a piece of that for the bow fin.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'll tell you this right now. You post a video of you catching a fish with a piece of that hoodie, and I'll give you $100.
And dude, don't tempt me.
Nah, I'm telling you right now, you cut a piece of that off and catch a fish with it, I'll give you $100. I want to see it happen.
I'll just cut a little piece of thread off, make a worm out of it for a trout, and just float it down a stream.
No, that's not right.
No, you said any piece of that hoodie.
You can't be innovative. You can't be innovative. Just a big square. Throw it out there.
You should know I'm pretty innovative, so.
That's true. That's true. Very true, actually. All right. So from this, I want to end with the spiel that we were going to do about snakes. And I know that it might seem weird because it's a fish podcast, but this is a very, very, very important information. Those of you who wade fish, bank fish, kayak fish, whatever. If you're like me, you've encountered a bunch of snakes over the years. And be a great thing to cover here at the end. About some great snake info, maybe what to do if you get bit, and just some great information that comes with that. So, Steve, take it away, man. You know, it's getting hot. You know, let's talk about snakes.
It's starting to get warm up here, and, you know, I'm a big reptile fan, and I know not everybody is. But I got a couple fun little statistics for you out there.
Okay.
So, as temperatures get warmer, you're inevitably going to come across snakes if you're out on the water, if you're out in the woods, whatever. I don't quite understand why everybody's so afraid of snakes. Personally, I love them. Maybe I love them because they're misunderstood. But
I'll say this real fast. I'm not scared of snakes per se when I see them, but it's when I step on them.
Mm-hmm.
But that's fair. I mean, you know, you get caught off guard by anything, and it might give you a spook. But
my mother-in-law. Sorry, I need to edit that. Go ahead.
I think you better leave that in. Anyways, all right. So here in the United States, there's roughly 8,000 bites from venomous snakes per year, right? Out of 8,000 bites, only 9 to 15 are fatalities. The most common bite that you're likely to sustain would be from a copperhead. People often don't realize how common copperheads are. They're probably one of the most plentiful snakes in a lot of areas. And here in eastern Kentucky, you know, growing up, everybody's like, oh, you better not go over there. It's full of copperheads and this and that. Almost 3,000 people a year are bitten by copperheads, and the fatality rate is 0.01%.
Yeah,
I've
done made up my mind. If I get bit by a copperhead, I'm not going to hospital. I'm toughing it out.
Now, yeah, there's a lot of people that don't go to the hospital. I'm not recommending that. But what I am saying is don't panic and freak yourself out about it, because out of all those people that get bit, I mean, the chances of dying of copperhead are so slim. And these are the fun statistics. I'll give them to you in a minute. So there's a test out there called the LD50 test. I don't know if you're familiar with what that is. LD50 means lethal dose 50%.
Okay.
It is developed by scientists back in the 70s. And what that means is they weigh out a certain number of mice. Okay. So in kilograms, of course.
Okay.
So how much venom does it take to kill 50% of these mice? LD50 means lethal dose 50%.
Okay.
You talk about the most venomous snake in the world, the inland taipan of Australia. They got all the rough, kill you stuff out in Australia. But the inland taipan's venom is 0.025 milligram per kilogram to kill 50%. That's the LD50.
Jeez.
That 0.025 milligram. That is an incredibly tiny, tiny amount. So one snake has, in one single bite, the capability of killing dozens of humans.
Yeah.
You compare that to the copperhead, which is the, you know, the most common envenomation in the United States. Copperheads are 10.9 milligram per kilogram. So they're mild on the spectrum of possibilities with venomous snakes. Eastern diamondbacks, by comparison, where copperheads may have a 0.01% fatality rate, Eastern diamondbacks have a 20 to 40% fatality rate if you're not treated. And then the things that fall in between be like timber rattlesnakes, which are the LD50 is 1.64 milligram per kilogram for the LD50 test, and cotton mouse, which is 2.04 milligram per kilogram. So on that scale, copperheads are very mild, you know, which is good because they're the ones that are most likely to come in contact with you and cause the most envenomations. So, like I said, out of 8,000 bites in the U.S. annually, only 9 to 15 people die per year.
Yeah, I don't want to say I recommend anybody not going to the doctor if you get bit. But
no, absolutely.
I know a lot of people survive copperhead bites without treatment, but I know a couple of people that died from copperhead. They were old people, though.
Usually they're older or they have some kind of medical issue, like they have a heart condition, or honestly, a lot of times people just have a severe allergy.
I think I'm more likely to die from a heart attack stepping on one than I am from the bite. Because scares the crap out of me. I had one try to get my kayak one time a couple years ago on Cave, and I smacked it with a rod just out of instinct and broke my rod, but I broke the back of that snake pretty bad. Freaked me out.
Well, the good news is here in the United States, unless you have a medical condition, over 99% of the bites can be treated.
Yeah.
There's several antivenins out there, which are basically antibodies that, you know, help your body fight off the venom.
Yeah.
Your best course of action is to not mess with the snake, because 90% of snake envenomations occur while trying to catch or kill the animal. So only 10% occur on pure accident. Like, you know, you just don't see it and step on it or whatnot. The greatest majority comes from people like that'll cut a snake in half and try to pick up the head part, and they end up getting bit anyways, and stuff like that. The majority of the snakes that you come across aren't going to be venomous. So here in the state of Kentucky, for example, we have 4 venomous species, the most common being the copperhead, like I mentioned, which is also the least venomous on the scale.
Mm-hmm.
We have timber rattlesnakes. And that's it for Eastern Kentucky, copperheads and timber rattlesnakes. Now, if you go to Western Kentucky, you can start finding cottonmouths, also known as water moccasins. And if you go far, far Western Kentucky, like land between the lakes, you may encounter pygmy rattlesnakes, which are, you know, these tiny, in my opinion, cute little rattlesnakes that are 8, 10, 20 inches long at max. None of our native snakes are particularly dangerous compared to, you know, what you'd find in Australia or Africa or even further down south And a lot of times I'll be fishing out of Cape Run and someone will say, oh, it's a cottonmouth, and it's just a harmless water snake. You know, yeah. It's slithering up on the bank trying to find somebody's leftover fishing bait to gobble down. And every time I'm out in the summertime, it seems I'm telling somebody, actually, in Round County, Kentucky, there's never been an instance of a cottonmouth. And, you know, some people believe me and listen to me. Some of them don't. They don't want to hear it because their grandpappy's brother's cousin's uncle knew somebody that was bit by a water snake. It was a cottonmouth or whatnot.
Yeah.
If you're going to be outside a lot, one of the key things that you need to do is you need to learn to identify the species. At least in the instance that if you were bit, you could kind of tell the hospital so they can point you in the right direction. A lot of times, if you're bit by a copperhead and you go to the hospital, they don't even give you antivenin. They just kind of moderate your pain, your swelling, make sure that you don't have an allergic reaction, give you fluids if necessary. But here in Kentucky, all of our venomous snakes are in the same family, the pit vipers. So if you're bit by any venomous snake here, you're going to be given an antivenom known as Crofab. Further down south where there's coral snakes, which are in a lapid, so in the same family as cobras, extremely venomous. If you were to get the venom in you, they treat it with a different kind of antivenom. But I know so many people I come across are afraid of snakes and everything, and there's no real need to be afraid of them. Just be cautious, and you know, if you encounter them, be respectful. Give them their space.
Yeah, yeah.
I promise you, regardless of the stories you've heard, I go out looking for these things. You know, because I'm a big enthusiast of it. I love to photograph them and, you know, come across them, study them, kind of monitor local populations and everything.
Yeah.
I go out looking for them and I put myself in that position. I have never been chased by a venomous snake. And so a lot of the stories that you hear are embellished or they're misunderstood more likely. Yeah. I've heard a lot of stories of like cottonmouths chasing people. Well, 9 times out of 10, the water is on one side of a person and the snake's on the other side, and the snake's just trying to get to the water to get away from a person. So, you know, somebody looks at that situation, they're like, oh, I'm being chased by a snake, when in reality, the snake's just trying to get the water.
Yeah.
To get away from the person.
Yeah.
So if you are bit by a venomous snake, you're going to know because it's going to hurt. Our native venomous snakes have a lot of neurotoxic venom and hemotoxic venom. So basically what it's doing is it's destroying the outside cellular wall. It's going to hurt. It's going to hurt a lot. So you're going to know. You're not going to get bit by a water snake and you know, be freaking out and think it. Don't even let it cross your mind that you were bit by a copperhead, because you're going to know the difference. Believe me when I say that. Yeah. If you're bit by a cottonmouth, you're down, and it's going to be super painful. If you're bit by a water snake, don't panic. I mean, you might bleed, but it's nothing potentially dangerous to you.
Yeah.
If you are bitten, what to do is immobilize the bite. So if you're bitten on the hand, for example, don't bend your hand. Take off any kind of jewelry that you have. The old school saying to put on a tourniquet and all that, science has proven that's not the way that you want to go. Do not try to suck out the venom like you've seen on the old Westerns. That's going to get you in a whole lot of trouble. So if you're bitten, immobilize the area that's been bitten. Importantly, stay calm, because most of us here in the U.S. can get to some form of medical treatment pretty quickly.
Yeah.
If you panic, you're going to spread the venom faster than if you stay calm. So try to keep the bite below heart level. If you're bitten in the hand, hang it low. Keep it below the heart. Stay calm. Get the medical treatment as soon as possible. Have somebody drive you. Call 911 if you need to. Most of all, just don't panic. And then when you get to the hospital, doctors will decide whether or not you need antivenin or whatnot. Again, out of 8,000 bites a year, only 9 to 15 are fatal. You compare that to other animals, that's not that bad. And a lot of the animals that we're made to be afraid of due to Hollywood are actually not that bad at all. So
I wonder what the death bite rate is on mother-in-laws.
I'd say pretty high.
Get back to us on that.
I don't think that's an instant death, though. You know, that's not something that you're not going to be able to run to the hospital.
That's say slow and painful.
Right, exactly.
Sorry, go ahead.
So I've always been told that a copperhead cannot dive underwater. Is that true?
That is not true. All snakes can swim. Even if you were to go get a sidewinder from the desert environment and put it in water, they can all swim and they can all dive because everywhere has seasonal rains. And part of a snake's strategy to avoid predators or being encountered sometimes is to hide at the bottom underneath water, you know? So they can dive, but our venomous snakes that we have here are generally heavier bodied, like they're thicker. If you ever seen cottonmouth up close, it's got the body like a sausage. Copperheads are a little bit thinner, but they're still plump snakes. Generally, if they're in water, they will be up top, but they absolutely can dive. And another myth that I've always heard is that baby snakes are more venomous than the adults because they can't control the amount of venom. The thing is, snakes are fully capable of all bodily functions as soon as they're born, and they're instinctive. And a baby copperhead, for example, only produces a fraction of the venom that an adult would. So any way you look at it, they're not more dangerous. The venom isn't any more potent. They're not producing more. It's not like they can give you more or anything. So that's a common myth. But compared to other animals, and I think you'll be surprised on this about what the most dangerous animal in America is. But I got a little list here. So let's start with sharks. How dangerous are sharks, do you believe? If you had to guess how many people a year are killed by sharks, what would your assumption be here in the United States?
50.
3.
What?
Even lower than 3. In the United States, one person every 2 years dies from a shark attack.
Really?
There's a lot of people that get bit on accident, but sharks, for the most part, don't like the taste of human. I guess, you know, all that McDonald's and fast food and whatnot. That may be true. It looked like, based on that shirt, that the drum was pretty excited to see you.
Yeah, I wouldn't have gotten the water after having that all over me.
That's
funny. Despite what sharks say, or I'm sorry, despite what Hollywood says in movies like Jaws, one person every 2 years, like statistically in the United States, you're more likely to be killed by a vending machine falling on you.
That's not a bad way to go.
Because I need my freaking Twinkies, man.
How about alligators? We all think, how many people a year are killed by alligators in the U.S.?
Well, I know we kill more alligators sharks than they kill us.
Yeah, that's right.
I've seen swamp people. I know how it works.
Chew them.
I'm going to say 5.
I'm going to say 20.
How about 1? One person per year on average is killed by an alligator in the United States.
Hey, did you all see that video of that guy going after that alligator with a frying pan? Like a cast iron skillet?
I did not.
That was in Australia. That was the crocodiles.
Oh, okay.
They're a little more temperamental than alligators.
I've seen one with a guy grabbing his dog from a crocodile. Yeah, the crocodile tried to take his little dog underwater. He ran out there and beat it up, took his dog back. I wouldn't do that. No offense. I love
and
my
then
dog.
That one guy that was jug fishing for catfish, and him and his son were on a Hobie.
They're
pulling that jug up, and he sees that nose come up. The kid starts screaming and crying. He's backpedaling instantly, just getting away from it.
While I wouldn't recommend going out and, you know, purposely hooking an alligator out on a Hobie, you know, and trying to pull it in that way, alligators are only responsible on average for 1 death per year in this country. So what do y'all think about bears?
All right, I got this. 5.
I'm going to say 3 again.
You know what? You're both right. In the U.S., an average of 2 to 5 people a year are killed in bear attacks.
So that's why I don't live out west. I feel like black bears, you know, they're scared of us, but grizzly bear, not living out there.
Well, yeah, I mean, you know, grizzlies, if one comes at you, you're pretty much screwed.
Yeah.
And nothing like polar bears, though. I mean, polar bears will really ruin your world if you're anywhere around them. Sometimes a grizzly bear will just mess you up and then leave. But almost guaranteed a polar bear is going to eat you if it gets a chance.
Yeah, he's going to kill you and eat you because they literally fight to survive. That's crazy.
All right, so you're driving down the road, you look out in the field, and you see some cows. How many people a year in the United States do you think are killed by cattle?
By cattle? Now, does this count bull riding?
Yeah. Count bull riding, being trampled, just accidents out in the field.
25. All the above.
25. Good Lord. I'd say 3.
Jeremy, you're actually closer. Roughly 20 people a year are killed in this country by cattle. So 20 people a year are killed by the friendly dairy cows that are on all the eat chicken billboards out there, you know?
Can you imagine so death by cow? Like, I don't want to go that way. Like, I hope mine's some kind of glorious death, you know? Not how did Nick die? Well, a cow stepped on his throat. You know, I mean,
he was milking it wrong.
It was a bull. Sorry.
All right.
Oh, so that reminds me of a bad joke.
Oh God, I got to edit that out. Go ahead, Steve. Sorry.
9 people a year by snakes. 20 people a year by cattle. What about man's best friend? How many people a year in the United States are killed by dogs?
Oh, I'd say 40.
80.
What do you think?
2.5.
Feral and domestic dogs, including people's pets that just happen to turn or find themselves in the wrong situation, kill on average between 30 and 50 people a year in this country. Nailed it, Nick.
Boom. Hate to say I'm smart, but I'm pretty smart.
What do you think about bees, wasps, and hornets?
Now I'm going to go with 82.
110.
While there's a lot of hospitalizations, especially for people with allergies, roughly 56 people a year in this country die from stings.
I'm allergic to bees.
That's what I said.
You don't even have to be allergic to bees because bees actually contain a lot of the same venom makeup as some of the snakes that we have out there. So even if you're not allergic and you get stung enough times in lower doses, of course, the bees are obviously packing less of a punch than a rattlesnake. But if you get stung enough times, even if you're not allergic, you can have a fatality. So if you were to fall into a nest of hornets and not be able to get away or you know, to evacuate quick enough, you could be potentially killed by them. You're more likely to be killed by them than by the snakes that we were talking about earlier. That brings me to the number one most deadly animal in North America. What do you think that is?
A house cat.
Let me think. No.
Responsible for 120 to 200 deaths per year on average in the United States.
Muskie. No. all right. Let's see.
Would you like a
domestic house cat?
Yeah, give me a hint.
It is a sportsman's favorite. Something that a lot of these outdoorsmen are going after every year.
Moose.
Same family.
Da moose.
Squirrel.
Deer.
It's a deer, Nick. It's a deer.
Deer are the deadliest wild animals in this country.
Now, again, does that count like car, like vehicle?
Yes, but collisions. You can't dismiss vehicular accidents because of it either. So they cause literally billions of dollars in property damage and are responsible for 120 to 200 deaths per year in this country alone, not counting in Canada or Mexico or other places that they live. Number one, of course, is by causing car accidents. But there has also been cases of people being gored to death by deer, particularly in rut,
yep,
usually associated with using scents. So the hunter goes out, he puts on a buck scent. A rutted out deer is crazy. You know, a deer in mid rut. Oh man, they're
one
just
thing on its mind.
Hormones,
corn,
and they'll go after whatever. And people have been gored to death by them. Some hunters have shot a deer thinking that it's down and done for, walked up on it, and the deer have that last little burst of energy, get up and kill the hunter, goring it, trampling it, stomping it, and whatnot. 120 to 200 per year versus 9 to 15 by snakes. So it's a long shot, but you know, if you look at it statistically, Bambi
just tells
is more
me
dangerous.
I need to be allowed to harvest more deer each year.
Well, I mean, some places you can get
help
a dozen
the people out.
Yeah.
Statistically, deer are more dangerous than snakes, alligators, sharks, and bears put together.
You forgot cows.
And cows. Actually, you could add up every other animal that I've talked on this list, you could put them all together and you still wouldn't have the number of deaths on humans as a deer on a typical year.
Nice. Interesting. Kill more deer.
You know
and,
what?
And cows.
And cows.
I blame the vegans.
Yeah. You may be right on that.
I'm kidding.
Well, guys, it has been a blast. Man, it's great talking with you guys again. And let's get together, go fish soon. Is that all right with y'all? Anything else y'all wanted to cover real quick?
You can stop the recording real quick.
Yeah.
How is the love your neighbor catch your fish stuff?
Hey. You gotta say it with passion.
Right? Love your neighbor and go catch some fish.
I didn't say you gotta say it like Darth Vader.
I didn't say it like that. Let me get my helmet on real quick. I will say, like, Darth Vader.
Go get your helmet.
I got it right behind. Well,
holy crap! You really? It's like dark helmet from Spaceballs.
Yeah,
that thing's huge. Oh god! All right, let's see your best Darth Vader. Love your neighbor and go catch some fish. No, you gotta do it. Come on. You gotta do it. Come on.
I can't do it right now.
Love your neighbor. No, I can't do it. Oh, it's terrible. All right. Those of you listening, love your neighbor. Go catch some fish.
Cool.